But this morning we continue in the book of Ezra. And if you remember, God had done something awesome with the Israelites. They had been going through 70 years of captivity. And they had been in Babylon, and they had been condemned to this captivity because of their sin. And they were guilty, and they knew it, and they were there in Babylon, and they were stuck there. And then after only 50 years of captivity, only 50 years of being taken away from their homeland, God gives them this wonderful opportunity. And what was that? To go home. I look at it like me and my daughter. Sometimes my daughter needs to be sent to bed for a nice long nap in the middle of the day when she just can't handle herself. But she'll be laying there in bed, and then sometimes I'll give her the opportunity. Okay, you can get up, but you're not going to get up and go play. You're not going to get up and watch TV. You're not going to get up and go outside. You're going to get up and sweep and mop and clean and do other things. And that's kind of what God does here. He says, okay, you can leave captivity, but you're going to go and you're going to rebuild the temple, and you're going to rebuild Jerusalem. It wasn't a vacation. Those who left early were the ones who were going to rebuild the temple. So there was a job associated with this departure from captivity. There was a task to be done. And God said, okay, I will let you go. And so we have this group of hardcore people. A lot of the older guys who had seen the first temple be destroyed, they're like, yeah, let's go. So they all get out there, and they're there, and they're doing the work, and they lay the foundation finally. And the people of the land, the Samaritans, came along, and we saw in chapter 3 and 4 that the Samaritans came in and they stopped the work. They halted the work of God. The opposition was successful at keeping them from growing and from accomplishing the task that God had sent them to do. So that's where we kind of pick up here in chapter 5. And we're going to be noticing that God was not happy with this arrangement of them waiting for 14 to 16, depending on how you count. If you count the year that they stopped and the year that they started, then you're going to see almost 16 years. But 15 full years that they stopped, that they didn't work, that they didn't do what God had called them to do. What did they do during that time? Well, if you read here in verse 1, it says, "And the prophet Haggai and Zechariah, the son of Iddo, prophets prophesied to the Jews who were in Judah and Jerusalem in the name of the God of Israel who was over them." Now, if you go to Haggai and Zechariah, both of their prophecies are recorded by books that bear their own names. You're going to find out that God said in Haggai in the first chapter, "You live in paneled houses. You have taken care of yourself. You have met your own personal needs. You have done what appeases yourselves. But my house still goes unbuilt." You see, the children of Israel, instead of accomplishing the task that God had, God was trying to restore them to himself. And rather than accomplishing that task, they had restored themselves to their previous state. Now, this is important if we're going to understand what God is doing here. For the Jews, all of their worship of God was based upon what? The temple. That was the center of their worship. It wasn't that way for Abraham. The center of Abraham's worship was he actually talked to God. But the Jews, after Moses and after the tabernacle of meeting, their whole focus was what? The temple. And so for them to worship once a year, they would come up and they would have the feasts, and they would read the word, and they would do all of these things. And for them, the focus of their worship was the temple. And so God, in an attempt to try to restore their worship unto him and to put them into a right relationship with themselves, between them and him, what does he want? He wants the temple rebuilt. His desire is that the people would be restored to a relationship with him. That was his desire. So what does God do? He says, "Go therefore and build the temple." And, you know, there's something to be said about this need to do certain things to be restored. I know it's said many times in the Christian walk that we are not saved by works. James said, but faith without works is dead. So what's the balance? You see, there's something that we have to understand about faith, and that is faith has to work. Faith has to work. Otherwise, it's dead. What does that mean? Well, you see, the children of Israel, God wanted to restore them to what? A relationship of worship with Him. And that required some work. That required for them to do something in order to get to that place. And I think this morning, God is calling each and every one of us to be restored to a relationship of worship with Him. But it's going to take some effort on our part. So many times we say, God, help me with this, and God, help me deal with that. Help me overcome this, and help me have the victory in that situation. God, help me not be depressed. God, help me not to be lonely. God, help me to be victorious in your word. God, help me to do this and that. And yet, we tend to our paneled houses, if you would, our own perceived desires and needs, rather than attending to the Lord's house. And so what he's saying here is, I want you to get back to work on what I have called you to do, what I desire for you to do. Do you want to be restored in your marriage? Do you want to be restored in your walk? Do you want your kids to become faithful followers of the Lord? Do you want your finances to go well? You know, all of these things that people pray for. Do we ask the Lord, okay, restore my heart and lead me into what I need to be doing, which is what? Worshiping the Lord in a relationship of worship. And that's really what he's talking about, returning to that process of restoration. Because it was going to take some work. And so here in chapter 5, we're going to be looking at that return to restoration. And we're going to be starting in here in verses 1 and 2. Notice it says there in verse 2, so Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Jeshua, the son of Jozadak, rose up and began to build the house of God, which is in Jerusalem. And the prophets of God were with them, helping them. Now, I love this because after 15, 16 years, depending on how you count, now they have the prophets coming and saying, you guys are not doing this right. 15 or 16 years had passed since they had stopped rebuilding the temple. They just have the foundation there. And they were getting lazy. What caused them to stop work? Well, if you remember, the Samaritans came and they petitioned to the king, and the king said, well, stop. I don't want them to become rebellious. And so the king made a decree and the Jews had to stop. So the opposition had caused them to stop. But you know what's funny about opposition? You don't have to maintain the same amount of opposing force to keep people from working. It's interesting in physics, an object in motion tends to stay in motion, but an object at rest tends to stay at rest. And all the enemy really has to do to stop our progress in the Lord is to get us to stop moving for just a moment, doesn't he? And then what happens to us? We become apathetic, yeah, we get lazy, and then it's hard to get us moving again. Imagine pushing your car down the road because you ran out of gas on the side of the freeway. What, to get it started is awful hard, isn't it? But once you get it moving, it's pretty easy to just keep it moving, to keep it rolling a little bit. That's kind of like our lives and our walk and what the Lord wants to do with us. See, the Jews, they had gotten it started and they were doing well, but then they hit this little incline, this hill. And the opposition was there, and they got him to stop for just a moment. And now, all of that kinetic energy is lost, and they became apathetic and stagnant, and they stopped moving. And the opposition didn't have a whole hard time to keep them from moving. 16 years that people sat doing nothing. It's easy for the enemy to get us sidetracked, isn't it? Maybe you've been sidetracked because of something that's gone on in your life. Maybe you lost your job. Maybe you lost a loved one. Maybe you had a difficult time in your marriage, or maybe you had a difficult time with your children, or maybe the financial crisis has really been getting you down. And it's easy because the enemy just needs one little tiny thing, doesn't he? And opposition turns to apathy, and apathy keeps us from moving because now we can't move forward. We just don't feel like getting up in the morning and reading our Bibles and studying the Word and praying, and we don't feel like even trying with our spouses because, you know what, it's just not worth it anymore, is it? That's how we feel sometimes. We feel like, you know what, budgeting and saving and being a good steward with our finances, what's the point? Who cares? I mean, there's not enough money to pay the bills anyway. Might as well spend it on the toys that I want, right? So we'll eat out or we'll do other things with our finances instead of like budget and pay the bills and prioritize and really hunker down and do what's right. It's real easy. Once the enemy can get us to stop moving forward, it's really easy to keep us at rest. And that's what he had done. So what did God do? They had become so apathetic, and that just means that they had become so lazy. They had become so stagnant that what did God do? He sent these two prophets, and he said, go talk to my people. Now, I don't know about you, but when people come to me and say, you know what, you're lazy, I don't like to hear that. Anybody else in the same boat? They don't like to be told that they're lazy? Okay, I'm not the only one. Especially when it's my kids. Get up, Dad. Or I'll get home. And I've been working hard, maybe, and I've been doing a lot. Or I remember I was redoing my roof. We had those winds that were a number of months back that blew off all the roofs on the house. Well, they tore up my house too. And so I had been up on the roof all day replacing these concrete shingles. And man, I get off the roof and I'm tired, and it's been sunny all day. I've been working in the hot sun, and all I want to do is sit down. And I sit down on my couch. Maybe you dads have your own seat. I have. They know it's Dad's seat. It's on the couch, but they know that's the one that I sit in. You sit anywhere else in the room. So I come in and I sit down, and I just want a soda and sit there in my chair for a little bit. And they're like, Dad, come outside and play. And Dad, we got to do this. And Dad, come on, get up. You can't just sit around. What are you talking about? I can't just sit around. Can't stand up either. I just sat down. And once I stop moving, it's over. And some of you dads know what I'm talking about. You come home and your wife is like, what are you doing just sitting there? Just sitting here is exactly what I'm doing. There was nothing else. No thoughts, no other intentions. I'm just sitting here, enjoying myself doing nothing. And then somebody comes in and they're like, get up! Don't tell me to get up. Go clean your room. You gotta tell me to get up. I'll find something useful for you to do. You know, have you ever felt that way where you're just frustrated because other people are like, yeah, they know that you should be doing what's right and you don't want to hear it? You're tired for whatever reason, and you have a million excuses on why you don't have to get up, right? I've got a million excuses why I don't have to get up. In the morning, I went to bed late. I got a lot of stuff to do today. I need to be rested if I'm not going to be mean, you know. I have to put to death the old man through a little bit of beauty rest. Can't fix ugly, but I cannot be mean, so I have to work on that. And I'll have a million excuses why when that alarm clock goes off, why I should hit the snooze button. Anybody else have that issue? Why I don't need to get up at 5 a.m. to go to prayer on Tuesday mornings. I got a bazillion reasons. Why I don't need to get up on Tuesday morning to go to men's prayer. Because once I'm at rest, it's easy to stay down, isn't it? It's easy not to move. It's easy not to get up and read the Word. And it's easy not to get up and pray. And it's easy not to get up and go to church. And I'm a pastor. Imagine that. It's easy not to get up and go to the mission field. It's easy not to get up and minister to the homeless at LA Streets on Saturday morning. It's easy not to get up and not to do anything because once you're at rest, it's easy to stay there. God had called Israel. They had marched across the desert. They had been excited, and they had been doing what was right. And man, they were just full of energy and excited and doing these things. And man, they were pulling up these big old rocks and setting them up as the foundation of the temple. And they were just making it quick. They were so zealous that they weren't taking the time to do it right. They were just taking the time to do it. You know, you ever done that before? And even some of the older people we read before, some of the older people were crying because they didn't have the same type of quality and craftsmanship in their rocks because they hadn't taken the time to hew the stones and other things to fit them properly. But they were excited and full of energy. And man, they had just been given the opportunity to serve and to do what was right. And they hit the gate running. Maybe when you first received the Lord, you were excited and you were passionate and you were desirous and you were here at every service and you got up in the morning and you read your word. You read the word and you prayed and you shared with people and you were ministering the gospel. And all it took was one or two small opponents. A small hill is all it takes, isn't it? Because if the enemy can get you stopped moving for a moment, it's easy for him to keep you there. So what does God do? He sends these prophets and he says, tell them to get up. I don't know about you, but I don't like to be told to get up. I want them to leave me alone. I sat down for a reason. If I wanted to be up, I'd be up. And therein lies the problem. My desires. James chapter 1 says, don't say when you're tempted that you're tempted by God. Don't say, I was born this way, God made me this way. Because God cannot be tempted, nor does God tempt anyone. He won't make you in such a way that you cannot succeed. But each one is tempted when they are led away in their desires by wrong things and enticed. You know, Jesus was tempted. How? He was hungry, a desire. The enemy tried to use that desire to lead him astray. Well, just eat food. Make the rocks into bread. What was Jesus' response? Do you remember? He said, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word of the word of God. What does that mean? He was trying to explain to us that our moral and ethical standard and compass has to be the word. We don't live by our desires, as Freud would like us to believe. We can't live by our emotions. We have to live by the word of God. I don't like it necessarily, what I have to do, but I have to do it because that's the will of God. I'm sure Abraham didn't like the fact that he had to take a knife and almost slaughter his son. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego didn't like the fact that they had to be thrown into the fiery furnace. And Daniel didn't like the fact that he was thrown to the lion's den. I'm sure Joseph didn't like the fact that he had to be sold into slavery, that he would one day redeem his family from the disastrous drought and famine. But it was the will of God, and we must accomplish it. And so many times what we really need is to come to a place where we understand, okay, God, not my will, as Jesus said, not my desires, not what I hope or want. See, I need to be told and reminded, and sometimes out of the mouth of babes, am I reminded that it's not about what I have for myself, what I want for myself, what I feel like doing. Daddy, get up. And that's my cue to get off my rear end and to go play with my kids. Because, hey, how many of you dads out there would say it's easy to get home and turn on football or turn on something else and just watch the TV and not spend time with your kids? Isn't that pretty easy? And you'll have a million reasons why you do it, too, don't you? Because you're tired, you've been at work all day, you are sick, you are whatever it is, right? And you'll get there and you'll get at home and you'll do that, and then your kids are being neglected. And then when they're 14 and 15 and they're desirous to be accepted, why do kids do drugs? Why do they join gangs? Why do they get into sin? Because they're desirous of acceptance that they don't get at home. You want to keep your 13-year-old daughter from getting a boyfriend? Then fathers, you have a relationship with her. You have a relationship with her. Because if you neglect your children, they're going to find somebody else who won't neglect them. And sadly, many times, that is gangs or drug abusers or other horrible, evil things. And then we wonder, well, what happened? I don't understand. Well, our apathy kept us on the couch. I don't like to be told by my kids what to do, but sometimes I need to be reminded by my kids what's right. So God sent these prophets, and he said, you remind them. You remind them of what's right, what they need to be doing. You see, God, who started the work, was faithful to complete it in them. And what did he do? He reminded them, and he told them, get back to work. And so here in verses 1 and 2, we see them returning to work. And you should write that on the first line. We see them returning to work. What happened when they became, when they had opposition and then they became apathetic and stagnant and lazy? What happened? Well, they started procrastinating, didn't they? You ever do that with your time in the Word? I'm running late today, so God, I'll do it tonight, right? You procrastinate. I'll do it tonight. You get home, I'm really tired right now. I'll do it in the morning. I'll do a double tomorrow, God. Right? And once you procrastinate, it's easy to keep it going. You know, even AA got this right. You know what they do? They give you little tokens every so many days that you're clean. Do you know why? Because it encourages you to keep going. Once you break that, you're at 0 days again. What happens? You're starting all over, and it's easy to procrastinate again. I'll start again tomorrow. I'll quit tomorrow. I'll start reading my devotion tomorrow. I'll start reading the next day. I'll start on Sunday. I'll start on Wednesday. I'll start on Christmas break. I'll start when the kids are out of high school. And we start procrastinating. And what happened? Because they were procrastinating, because they became apathetic and lazy, and they were stagnant, what happened? They weren't moving forward, and the result was the moral and ethical failures that sidetracked the entire nation. We're going to be reading about that in chapters 9 and 10. They started intermarrying with the other people of the nation. They started getting into idolatry. They started doing all this wicked stuff. And Ezra, when he finally gets down to Jerusalem, all he can do is he has to sit there and correct everybody the whole time. Because isn't that what happens when we get apathetic, when we stop having our devotions, when we stop praying, when we stop being fervent about the Lord's business? When we let ourselves go, what happens? We start failing morally and ethically. We start making excuses on why we should be able to do what we're doing. And then, in the end, we can't get anything accomplished. And the longer we procrastinate, the harder it is to get it started. So what does God do? I love what he does. He sends these two. He gets their attention, and he says, get back to work. Get back to work. Jesus, talking to the church in Revelation 2, said, you have lost your first love. You lost your first love. Yet you were at a place where you were fervent and you were desirous and you were excited and you were doing what was right, but then you kind of got stagnant. So go back and do what? The first works. The first works. I challenge you this morning, get back to work. Get back to work on your marriage. Go back and do the first works. Go back and have a date. Please. Husbands, take your wives out. Leave the kids with someone else. And not just for an hour or two. You know what? Find somebody to pawn them off for a whole day. A full 24-hour period. Do yourself a favor and pawn your kids off and go on a date. And do the first works. Go to the, reenact your first date if you want to. You know, go to take her to the beach or do something. Go back and do the first works. Go back and spend time. Go back and talk. Remember when you could talk for hours and hours and you could finish each other's sentences, but you would be willing to just listen and not argue. And you wouldn't be talking only, I mean, could you imagine? You meet a person for the first time and all they want to do is talk about all the problems. There wouldn't be a second time. So don't do that with your spouse. Just go out and talk about nice things, that which is noble, true, and praiseworthy. Think, and then let's put in the word talk about these things. Get back to work on your marriage. Being kind and gentle to one another. Loving each other. Spending time with each other. Focusing on one another. Get back to work on your marriage. How about your finances? You know, my daughters, they wanted to get a movie. This, their favorite movie ever. So what did they do? Started saving. See, when we're trying to teach them about money, they don't understand the value of money. So how do you teach kids the value of money? You make them save it. And you make them save it, and you make them save it. And then they realize it's hard to get that much money. They have them find a tangible thing that they have to save for. In their case, it was this movie. And then you make them save up for it. And it took them a long time to save up for their movie. And then when they got it, guess what? That movie, my daughter Abigail, she's walking around with the box for the movie. She will let my little 2-year-old and my 11-month-old, almost 12 months old now, destroy all the covers for the DVDs. It drives me nuts. You know, you find them all DVDs scattered everywhere, and maybe you have little kids in your house, you know what I'm talking about. But this one, she protects. She doesn't want it to be broken. She doesn't want the girls to get to it. She doesn't want it to get scratched. They'll scratch every other movie in the house, but the one that they had to buy. Oh, they understand the value of that movie because they had to spend so much time saving and earning the money, and then they had to wait for a time to go to the store and buy it. And that's the worst, when they had the money and then they had to wait to go buy it because you can't just jump in the car and go get it. Teaching them that even though you have the money for something, it doesn't mean you should just buy it. So if you're dealing with your finances, go back and do the first works. Remember the value. Remember what it means to work hard and to be diligent and to save and to value your possessions and to be a good steward over your finances. Go back and budget. Set goals for yourself. Follow the word. Get back to work on your walk. You know what, when you first came to Jesus and you were in church all the time and all you wanted to do was worship him, and you would not sit in that audience without raising your hands or lifting your voice, closing your eyes and pouring your heart out to the God who had just redeemed you from the darkest sin. Get back to work, praising him and honoring him and loving him and giving him your heart. Getting up early and getting dressed and getting here on time. Having your devotions every morning and reading about him with a newness of spirit that you would say, oh God, I never saw that before about you. That's awesome. Talking about him to everybody that you know, not being able to shut up, maybe losing friends over it. Remember those days? Get back to work. And keep it going. God called them to attention. The people had focused on their desires and their paneled houses, but God said, get back to work. So, now that he calls him back to work, everything's better, right? I wish. Remember, the enemy knows. He knows us. All he has to do is get us to stop moving for 5 minutes, right? And then it's over. My wife knows. If I come home, she can't let me sit down. She's got to give me the honey-do list before I sit down. Otherwise, it's like, getting me up is a pain. So, what does the enemy do? The trials, just because the people were now back to work, doesn't mean that the trials disappear. In the end of verse 2, it says, so they got back and they rose up and began to build the house of God, which is in Jerusalem. And you'll find out that they were doing it zealously. I mean, they got back and they got their momentum back. Read in verse 3 with me. It says, at the same time, Tattenai, the governor of the region beyond the river, and Shethar-Bosnai and their companions came to them and spoke thus to them. Well, who commanded you to build this temple and finish the wall? Well, then accordingly, we told them the names of the men who were constructing this building. But the eye of their God was upon the elders of the Jews, so that they could not make them cease till a report could go to Darius. Then a written answer was returned concerning this matter. And this is a copy of the letter that Tattenai sent. Now, this is awesome because I love what it says. The opposition came back, right? You're going to decide to work on your marriage. You're going to decide to work on your finances. You're going to decide to work with your kids. You're going to decide to work on your devotional life and on your spiritual life. You're going to decide to work on your family. You're going to decide to work on what God has called you to do in the ministry. And guess what? The first thing is going to happen. As soon as you get going, you're going to be opposed again. Okay, just because you decided to get back on the horse doesn't mean the horse isn't going to try to buck you off. And so what happens? They're working. But I love what he says in verse 8. Let it be known to the king that we went to the province of Judea, to the temple of the great God, which is being built with heavy stones and timbers being laid in the walls. And this work goes on how? Diligently, and it prospers in their hands. I love that about them. When they got up, they went full force. They didn't do it halfway. They got going, and they were working diligently. And what happens when we work diligently on our marriage? Our marriage will prosper. What happens when we work diligently on our finances? Finances will prosper. What happens when we work diligently with our children? Our children will prosper. But what happens when we are apathetic? Well, everything fails. And so as they're back to work, what returns? They return to work, but they also return to opposition. As soon as they're diligent and they're doing what's right, and you should write that on the second line, by the way, they get opposition. Can't we just have a break? But I love what happens. Tattenai, the governor, he's basically everybody from the Euphrates over. He had a wide swath of land that he was dealing with. And when he heard that they started rebuilding it again, he freaks out. So he makes a personal visit with his assistant. They go down and they check out the work. And you know what they find? Man, these people are hardcore. You know what I like about what it says here? He came to stop them. Who told you could rebuild this temple? And who said that you could rebuild the wall of the city? And look at what this says about them. But the eye of their God was upon the elders of the Jews. What does that mean? They were empowered by God to oppose their opposition. How do we know that? Look at what it says. So that they could not make them cease. What does that mean? They tried to make them cease, but they could not succeed. You see, the Lord said, and the word says, resist the devil. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. What happens when they faced opposition? They oppose. You know what? Our God told us to build this temple, and we will build this temple whether you like it or not, and we're not going to stop again. This time, you're not going to hold us back. This time, you're not going to sidetrack us. This time, we're going to complete it. Then they started freaking out. They're telling the government no. That gets scary. So what does the governor say? Well, I'm telling the king. I'm telling. Fine, tell him. Fine, I will. So he writes him a letter. And he told them all about it, didn't he? Well, they're building this temple, and they're rebuilding the wall, and they're doing it really diligently and really fast. And if you don't hurry up and make a decision, well, they're going to get it done, and then there's going to be problems. And that's really the essence of his letter that we're going to see later. They got back to work. The opposition was still there. But you know what? This time, the trials were different. How were the trials different? Wasn't it the same problem that they had before? That the people came and tried to stop the work? Yes, it was the same problem. What was the difference? They were not willing to let go. They were not willing to stand down. There are certain issues, folks, that we should not be willing to stand down on. And we should be willing to make a fight for those. We should be willing to say, we will not move. We will not change. We will stand for this and this alone. How about in your home? Do you and your house serve the Lord? That's what Joshua said. Me and my house, we are going to serve the Lord. There's no questions. There's no, okay, mom and dad are going to serve the Lord, but the kids are going to listen to pagan music and have their friends over and sleepovers with people of the opposite sex, and we're going to allow our kids to do all this stuff and have these bad posters in their rooms and do all this kind of stuff on the internet. No. Me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. Period. My girls don't need phones. They won't need phones till they're married. That's when they're 40. When they're 40 and I pick out a husband for them, he can let them get a phone if he wants them to. My daughter Abigail told me, Daddy, I really want a phone for Christmas. No. Nope. You're 9. You don't need a phone. Almost. Maybe when you're 30. What? You know what? When I was a kid, we didn't have phones. We had quarters. We had to go to the pay phone. And even then, you had to find one. And you know what? How did you talk to your friends? We actually went over and talked to them. It was this really fun thing called spending time together. Yeah, people don't understand that anymore today. But the leaders, they stood up against the rulers. But God, look at what it says. But the eye of their God was upon the elders of the Jews, meaning he empowered them, the elders, to do what? To stand up for what's right. Do you, as a father or as a mother, stand up for what's right over your home? You make a stand for what's right in your home, in your finances, and maybe you're a boss or a supervisor. Do you stand up for what's right in your job? How about in your finances, or how about in your choices? You know, do you make your kids do what's right no matter what? There's an idea that we have to be our children's friend nowadays. I'm sorry. I'm not here to be my kids' friends. I need to be friendly. I need to be nice. But I'm here to be their dad. And I'm here to tell them and teach them what's right, not just to appease them. They could not make them cease because the elders stood up for what's right. Husbands, you want your family to do well? You stand up for what's right. You get up and you have your devotion. And then you have your kids get up and you have their devotions. And every week you have a family devotion at least once a week. And you read the word and you talk about it and you teach your kids the basics. And you spend time with them. And you stand up and they will not be able to stop you. You will not be able to stop your children. The people, not just the leaders, but the people too, were bold. They didn't just let the government run over them. No, you're not going to do this. You're not going to oppose us. You're not going to stop us. You can do whatever you think you want to do. And then Cyrus, and then Darius, and everybody else can bring the entire army against us. Because remember Sennacherib? 185,000 died when he tried to oppose us. And we will serve the Lord. Do whatever you think you've got to do. But we will serve the Lord. Period. I love what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said to Nebuchadnezzar right before he threw him into the fiery furnace. We will not bow. Now, our God is able to save us. If he chooses not to, tough. We're still not going to bow. They did not base their obedience on God's protection. They based their obedience on God's desire for them, his will for them. Period. God, I'll serve you as long as you protect me. That's not what we do. God, I will serve you no matter what, and I ask that you protect me. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're awesome because they go into that fiery furnace. God, we may be meeting you today. And it was awesome because they did meet him that day. Nebuchadnezzar says to his advisors, hey, didn't we throw only 3 people into that furnace? Well, I see a 4th, and his image is like the Son of Man, the Son of God. They got to meet Jesus that day because they stood fast and they did what was right, no matter what the consequences. You know, that's what it takes. That's what it takes in your marriage. That's what it takes in your finances. That's what it takes in your homes. That's what it takes in your walk. that you would stand fast no matter what the consequences and allow the Lord to deal with the rest. And you might get fired from your job. Or you might get, you know what? Your kids might not want to talk to you anymore because you stood fast. And you wouldn't let them do that at your house. And then you told them you can't do that here, so you're going to either have to change or leave. They may leave and never want to talk to you again, but you know what? You stand fast and you let the Lord deal with the rest. You do what's right. And that's what they did. They returned to opposition, but they had a different heart, didn't they? And this time, the enemy did not prevail. He didn't slow them down. So while the enemy's like, okay, well, we're going to go to Darius. What are you going to do? We're going to send Darius a letter. We're going to ask him to look in the history books and the writings, and he's going to deal with this. All the while, what were the people doing? Working. All the while, they were prospering. All the while, they were coming closer and closer to being restored completely to the Lord's worship and his service. Don't stop. Don't let up. You just keep going. Until they fire you, you're not fired yet, are you? You're not fired until they fire you. Your spouse hasn't left you until they've left you. Your kids aren't gone until they're gone. So you stand fast. You do what's right. You honor the Lord, and you let him do the rest. Period. Don't succumb to opposition. In the final thing, in the final part, we see in verses 6 through 17, they had to return to the past. See, when they respond, and I want you to write that on that third line, returning to the past. How did they respond to these leaders of the Israelite, of the Persians, their governor? How did they respond? Well, he gives us this detailed account. So where did he get this detailed account from? From the Jews. You know, it's interesting. They learned from their mistakes. They learned from their mistakes. So many times, it's been said in the past, if you don't learn from your mistakes, from history, you're bound to repeat it, aren't you? And while I may not be perfect, I don't want to keep doing the same things over and over and over. And so I need to learn from my mistakes. I need to learn, okay, what caused this to happen? And what do I need to do in the future so that it doesn't happen again? And what do they say? In verse 7, notice, they start this letter and it says, to Darius the king, all peace, or peace on every side, really. It just means long live the king, kind of a standard greeting. Let it be known to the king that we went to the province of Judea, to the temple of the great God. Notice they call him the great God. Who told him that this was the great God? The Jews did. They didn't believe in the Judean God. They believed in the sun god. That's who the Persians worship. So he's been told, no, our God is greater than any of the gods that you guys have ever known. Not some idol. Our God is awesome. So he says, to the temple of the great God, which is being built with heavy stones and timber is being laid in the walls, and the work goes on diligently and prospers in their hands. Now, it's interesting because they talk about the temple and the wall. The wall that they're talking about was the wall outside of the temple that surrounded the temple, not the city wall of Jerusalem, but the wall around the temple that fenced in the porch, the Gentiles' porch. So we're talking about that wall plus the temple is being built. Remember, you couldn't have the holy temple. The Jews couldn't allow an unclean person to come near the temple. So you had to have not just the tabernacle. If you remember, Moses had the tabernacle of meeting, but he also had what? The fence around it. So they're building the temple and the wall around it. And it's interesting because he says here, so they're building it out of these. The building is being laid, the timber is being laid in the walls, and this work goes on diligently and it prospers in their hands. Man, they're tearing it up. And so when we asked those elders and we spoke to them, who commanded you to build this temple and to finish these walls? We also asked their names to inform you that we might write the names of the men who are chief among them. So they're tattling and they're telling him, these are the names of the people in charge. So when you're going to come spank them, make sure you get these guys first. It's going to backfire. We're going to see in chapter 6 that these guys are forced to pay for the restoration of the temple. That's pretty cool. But right now, They're trying to get them killed. So what happens? And thus they returned us an answer, saying, so this is what the Jews told their governor. And I love this answer. We are the servants of the God of heaven and earth. And we are rebuilding the temple that was built many years ago, which a great king of Israel built and completed. Number one, what did they need to remember of the past? We are the servants of the great God of heaven and earth. We do not submit to you or to Persia or to anyone else or to Darius. We serve God only. That needs to be our focus as Christians. We serve God only. Now, I obey the law as much as I can. But if the law tells me that I can't serve Jesus, guess what? All I have to respond to them is, I serve the great God of heaven and earth. No. Do we remember who we serve? Who called us? You see, what they remembered about the past was who called them, who saved them, who established them. When I start to remember those things, you know what I remember? It's not about my decisions. It's not about what I want. I need to serve him. But then they go on and they say, but because our fathers provoked the God of heaven to wrath, he gave them into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, the Chaldean, who destroyed this temple and carried away the people to Babylon. So what's the second thing that they remember about the past? Their failures. Why? Are they trying to dwell on their failures? No. But they're saying, we're not doing that again. We're not going to irritate God anymore, which means you're going to just have to live with what we're doing. Because we have to choose between irritating God or you. And I don't know about you, but I'd rather irritate man all day long than have God mad at me. And that's basically what they're saying. You need to make a choice. You need to make a choice who you will serve and who you will submit to and who you're willing to irritate. It may irritate the city that churches want to be in this city. Our city is historically opposed. The city of Azusa does not like churches. They hate churches. They are famous for evicting churches and businesses. But we'll talk about the churches. They don't like churches here. I'm sorry, I don't care. You don't like it? Tough. When we find a building, you know what's going to happen? We're going to ask them for a permit to meet there. And when they don't, then we're going to say, we're going to get a lawyer, and we're going to make you give us a permit to meet there. Do you know why? Because God has called us to the city. And when he provides a building, that's what we're going to do. Period. End of story. And if they don't like it, tough. Because I'd rather irritate them than God. I'd rather irritate them then move out of the city and not be in God's will. And that's where we need to be. That's where we need to be in our marriages, in our finances, in our families, in our careers, in our walks. You know what? I'd rather be late to work than irritate the Lord and not read my word, his word, not have my devotion, not pray. You know, I'd rather be late to a party. I'd rather to a Christmas party or something than not have my devotion. Some of you may be like yard sales. I love yard sales. Saturday morning. You got to get up early for yard sales, though. You ever notice that? But if I have my devotion, it means I have to get up like 4 o'clock or I'm going to miss all the good deals. I'd rather miss the good deals than not have my devotion in the morning. You see, they had to look back and say, you know, I'm not going to irritate God. I'm going to serve God. If you're irritated about that, sorry. But there's nothing I can help you with. You need to get right with God, the great God of heaven and earth. And so they go on, and they say, here in verse 13, however, in the first year of Cyrus, the king of Babylon, King Cyrus, he issued a decree to build this house of God. Also, the gold and the silver articles of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple that was in Jerusalem and carried into the temple of Babylon, those King Cyrus took from the temple of Babylon, and they were given to one named Sheshbazzar, who he had made governor. And he said to them, take these articles, go, carry them to the temple site that is in Jerusalem, and let the house of God be rebuilt on its former site. Then the same Sheshbazzar came and laid the foundation of the house of God, which is in Jerusalem. But from that time, even until now, it has been under construction and is not finished. So whether or not you like what we're doing, we even got permission for what we're doing. Leave us alone. You know, it is within your right to respond to people according to your rights. If, you know, it's your right to go and to hand out tracts. Did you know that? Sometimes you have to teach people in evangelism. Don't just let people run you off. Because the enemy loves to run you off. They don't want you to hand out tracts in front of a mall or anything else. You have to know your rights. But yeah, you can also use those for your benefit to share. Not to be a jerk, but to share. And they said, you know what? You find out. We're allowed to do this. Now leave us alone. And even if we weren't, we don't care. We're going to do it anyway. Because God told us to be here. God told us to do this. And you're not going to stop us from honoring God. We're not going to stop. They tried to stop them. But what happened? They couldn't prevail. Because an object in motion tends to stay in motion. And if we get up and we get going and we have our devotions every morning and we read the Word and we pray and we seek the Lord, and we set our eyes on the things of God, and we stay diligent in those things, it's going to be really hard for the enemy to stop us, isn't it? Try as he may, resist the enemy, and he will flee from you. They returned to their past. They remembered their failures. They remembered who had saved them. They remembered their call. They needed to remember that they were called to do this. That's something that we have to remember when we're facing trials, isn't it? What God has called us to do. What he has commanded of us. Because it's easy, isn't it, to forget that and just look at the trials. To forget the call and look at the hardships. They left it in God's hands. Now, therefore, if it seems good to the king, let a search be made in the king's treasure house, which is there in Babylon, whether it is so that a decree was issued by King Cyrus to build this house of God at Jerusalem. And let the king send us his pleasure concerning the matter. So we're just going to let you deal with this king, since you're all awesome and great. Prove them wrong, liars, so that we can just spank them and destroy them. Whatever it takes. You know, there's going to be opposition. But if you were to focus your heart on what God has called you to do, and you were to stand fast in what he has for you, God doesn't have... It's not hard to oppose the enemy. Why? An object in motion tends to stay in motion. And so if he's stopped, you're going to plow right over him. You're going to keep moving. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. He's going to run away. I love that about that. That God would allow us the power to resist the enemy. So maybe this morning is time for you to resist the enemy. Maybe this morning is time for you to get up and stand up and do the work that God has called you to do. Do the work in your marriage. Do the work in your finances. Do the work in your family. Do the work in your career. Do the work in the Lord's service and in the ministry. Get refocused. Don't become apathetic. Put your heart and your life and your eyes on the things above and watch as God gives you the strength to overcome. Let's pray. Father, as we come before you, we thank you for this time in your word. And Lord, we would ask that as we would come before you, that you would help us to overcome. Father, that as we would serve you, that your glory would be shining through our lives and that you would be revealed in our hearts. And Lord, for each one here, I pray that today that you would bless them with your rest and your comfort and your mercy. Strengthen each one here this morning, Father, that as they would go out, they would accomplish what you have called them to do. So we thank you for this time and we praise you for all of your wonderful mercy. And in the name of Jesus, we pray. Amen.